All right, guys, welcome once again to your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Brad Howard, and I've got John Barman on the phone. And today we're going to talk about fat metabolism, fat and carbohydrate metabolism, because we've gotten a lot of questions about, you know, how this works when it revolves around specific exercise and things like that. I think there's a lot of things we can clear up on this. That way people really don't get confused. And we're going to wrap it all back to how it actually comes back down to the deficit anyway. So, John, what are some of the big questions that we're getting right now?
In general, people just aren't quite understanding clearly the difference between a caloric deficit overall and then how your body gets around to using up fat storage and burning fat versus burning the food you've eaten, the energy from the food you've eaten, and burning stored glycogen. So people get the idea that you've got to be in some – I mean, people get the idea a deficit's going to do something, but then they get tangled up when they hear that there's target fat-burning zones like a heart rate zone and the difference between, well, isn't cardio – doesn't that burn fat? But doesn't high-intensity stuff, that doesn't really burn fat. So – and then post-exercise oxygen consumption. Like there's all these – like when you start slicing and dicing and dividing it up into all of these complex explanations, the caloric deficit starts to – people start to forget that that's what makes it all work, and then people start worrying about, oh, am I in the right heart rate zone? And, you know, well, wait a minute. Where does the energy come from, and how does this actually work? So it's clear that people just aren't really even seeing it how – they don't have the basic idea of how it works at all. So I figure we might as well just get to the basics of how your body even burns energy at all, because it seems as though people don't even know that part. But then they'll read an article about the intricacies of one of the pathways, but without having a base level knowledge, all of it just becomes super confusing.
Sure.
Yeah. So, right. So I guess we'll just get right into it. So the simplest way to explain this is your body's going to use some amount of carbohydrate energy stored or ingested, and some amount of fat energy stored or ingested all the time. It's just going to be burning that, like all the various tissues of your body are metabolizing some amount of both all the time as just the primary energy source for the normal functioning of your systems. So percentage wise, meaning what percentage of the total energy being burnt comes from stored fat or basically a fat energy, so a stored fat and some dietary fat, versus carbohydrate depends on the state you're in. So if we looked at it as a spectrum of intensity, so the highest intensity exercise being just a full-on sprint as fast as you can go, or the lowest intensity movement or state, which we'll just say sleeping. So in the lowest intensity state, sleeping, you're burning the highest percentage of fat. Also because you're fasted when you're sleeping too, so you're not ingesting anything. So technically, you're burning a higher percentage of fat of all the energy you're burning at that moment. Most of it's fat. It doesn't mean you're burning a lot of total energy, but it just means the energy that is being spent is mostly coming from fat. And obviously, there's some glucose being burnt there too. It's not like you ever completely switch to 100% fat burning. And then so that's one end of the spectrum, sleeping. So and the other end of the spectrum is just the full-on highest intensity thing you could possibly do, which would be something along the lines of an all-out sprint or an all-out complete max effort, which can only be sustained for 6 to 10 seconds. Now, on that end of the spectrum, you're actually burning stored ATP and some phosphocreatine. So you're not even dipping into glucose stores at that point. So you're even past glucose metabolism there. You're actually burning stored ATP, that's how creatine works, incidentally, for weight training and sprint exercise, because it replenishes that phosphocreatine system a little bit and tops it up. So those are the two ends of the spectrum. An all-out sprint is just actually stored ATP, which is completely on demand. You can burn it like it's ready to be burnt immediately. It's not and then on the other end, it's sleeping, and that's where you're burning a lot of fat. Now, everything else in between is somewhere on that spectrum. So sitting around at a desk doing some work, then getting up and going for a walk, and then going a bit faster than walking, then jogging, then running, then somewhere between a jog, run, and a sprint is as you approach anaerobic threshold, and that's the barrier between That's the point where the exercise becomes significantly more anaerobic than aerobic. And right off the bat, those words probably don't mean a whole lot to people. Aerobic and anaerobic simply mean with or without oxygen. So your body, essentially, your body's eventually always going to need to use oxygen to catalyze the reaction to burn energy, no matter where the energy is coming from, fat or carbohydrate. But the threshold is the point where whether or not it's sustainable. So in other words, aerobic exercise, like going for a long sustained jog, that means you're training at a level where your body's oxygen demand and uptake can match it. So you can just kind of keep jogging and jogging and jogging. Whereas if you go faster and faster, eventually you're moving faster than your oxygen, than your aerobic system, your oxygen dependent system can keep up. And so you eventually have to slow down. You have to slow down to match what your oxygen uptake can match. So that's the idea of moving into the longer duration sprints where, yeah, you maybe can do a 400 meter sprint, but then you'll have to back off. Whereas you can run for longer distances. So all of it is always dependent on oxygen. The break point is how fast are you burning energy and whether or not your aerobic system can keep up with it. Okay, so all of this gets a little confusing, and because the faster you're going or the more intense you're moving, the more energy you're burning in a given unit of time. But that doesn't mean, even though you're burning more glucose, that doesn't mean it's not eventually contributing to a calorie deficit. So the overriding point when it comes to weight loss here is it doesn't matter how you burn the energy, it just matters that you burn it, because eventually the systems of your body are still going to require energy to fuel them for the rest of the day anyways. So if you've created a deficit and all of it was high intensity and you technically weren't burning a lot of fat during that exact exercise, that doesn't matter. You've still created a deficit that is eventually going to be made up by your body fat.
Right. Yeah, so, and so, all right, so let's ask this question. I mean, we talk about, what you eat at that point. You know, I guess the way I'm looking at it now is, you know, when you eat, I mean, there are just a bunch of different things coming in, and then your body almost kind of sifts through, I would imagine, like what sources of what, like if it's a fat, a carbohydrate, proteins, and all, they all go through like different.
They all have their own ways of being absorbed and taken up, and they all, I mean, fat is essentially just goes straight into fat stores. Like part of it gets burnt, and then the rest of it just gets stored as fat. Carbohydrates replenish your carbohydrate stores that have been used up, and any excess carbohydrate that isn't going to be burnt. So once you top up your carbohydrate stores, and some of it is actively being burnt by all the various cells of your body, and then after that, that stuff gets converted to fat and stored too. Any excess calories at all get stored as fat. And by definition, excess means that's not going to be stored, at least when it comes from glycogen, glucose. Body has restored glycogen to the point where it's like all of it's stored, there's nowhere else to put it, the rest of it gets converted to fat.
All right, well, let's talk about this, because you know this is a real, really, really big misconception, and I think this will probably clear up a lot. There are a lot of people that think that the only way the body can store fat is through insulin. Or raised insulin, and that there's no other pathway to do that.
Well, no, not really. I mean, insulin's partly responsible for it, because when you eat, if you have normal functioning, if you're not diabetic or don't have some kind of insulin impairment, a normal functioning person, insulin is partly responsible for the storage of fat, simply because it's responsible for the storage of all nutrients. So when you eat anything, insulin's job is to put it somewhere. So it's responsible for clearing glucose from your blood, and then it gets stored. So that, I mean, it gets stored in your liver, it gets stored in your muscle cells, it gets stored wherever it needs to be stored. And so but that's normal. That's like the way it's supposed to function. Otherwise, right. Where else would it, or otherwise you'd have massive amounts of carbohydrates and fat floating around in your blood, and that's where you get huge problems, and that's why diabetics are in big trouble if they don't get some kind of control with their insulin.
What about if all you ate was fat?
If all you couldn't survive because you wouldn't have enough. I mean, you'd need some protein. Do you mean just like fat and?
Yeah, like if somebody was going to go on a diet, right?
Oh, no, they would still get stored. It's not like you have to have massive jumps in insulin to store it.
Okay. I see
what you're saying. Yeah. No, it's excess fat still gets stored. It's not like
it's just so I guess it's so slippery, for lack of a better term. It's so readily available, stored. It doesn't take much.
No, it still gets stored. Yeah. There's insulin's not the only hormone. There's all kinds of hormones at work there. So it's just that almost nobody ever eats just straight fat.
Right. So
that would be very awkward. That'd be completely unsustainable life.
Right. So if all you chose to eat was protein and carbohydrates, obviously the spike would come from protein, which would cover that, and then all the other hormones that would bring into play too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I was just asking because I know that's a question that comes across a lot of times. You know, talking about what insulin is the dominant.
Well, that's the first misconception, that it's completely just insulin and that there's not other hormones that are also involved. There's multiple hormones, and they're still discovering more families of hormones and receptors that are involved in the storage and release of fat as well as glucose and carbohydrates. So, we're rounding the picture out, but we're still learning a bit more about it.
Right. And what about the I know we've talked about in the past. Probably need to kind of bring this back up, but you know, let's talk about the difference between what raises insulin and what raises blood sugar.
What raises insulin and what raises blood sugar? Blood sugar raises insulin.
Right, but you remember how we had a conversation about ketogenic diets and things like that.
Oh, protein does it too.
Right. So
protein and carbohydrates both elicit an insulin response because they both need to be dealt with it by insulin.
Right.
But fat doesn't necessarily need insulin, so fat will be dealt with regardless.
Okay.
So if you have impaired insulin functioning, like a diabetic, that's when your blood sugar goes all over the place, and like diabetics don't last very long without insulin. Meaning,
oh, sure.
Like they'll die. Like they actually need to have some insulin. So.
Gotcha. All right, so we've got kind of that nutrition part wrapped out. What are some of the other things that and misconceptions as far as fat and carbohydrate storage?
Well, I guess people just aren't getting – like people can't make the connection to the percent of what type of energy is being burnt during a given exercise and how that eventually becomes a deficit and how that deficit eventually – turns into body fat being burnt. So
right.
You got to understand that there's, in general, you're all the systems of your body, all the cells of your body are constantly requiring energy. That energy is they're always burning some amount of energy. And that energy is coming from somewhere. And typically, it's always coming from some amount of stored fat and from some amount of stored glycogen. So they're going to be using up energy all day long anyways, regardless. And if you're eating the exact same amount of energy on a daily basis that all your cells are using up, that gives your body no reason to ever go to your stored body fat to find any more energy. It doesn't need it because it can get it all from the food you're eating. So as you just kind of have to view it like a gas tank. As you're kind of burning through the gas in the tank, if you keep filling the tank back up, which is analogous to just eating again, you've got no reason to go into other gas tanks, which I guess would be your stored body fat. This analogy is a bit difficult, but you see what I'm saying? It's kind of like having extra gas in the trunk in canisters that you could eventually use. But if you're just constantly stopping to fill up the gas tank, you're never going to dip into the stored energy that you have like in the trunk.
Well, it'd be like, yeah, you'd have. Let's say you had stored energy in the trunk. Let's say stored diesel fuel in the trunk, right? But you keep pouring a mix of gas and diesel into the gas tank, and all of a sudden your car just naturally, it doesn't matter what you put in, it can naturally adjust.
It's just going to burn whatever's in the primary gas tank first, and then until that's completely empty, as soon as you refill it, it'll just use that first because it's easier. That's the only reason it does that. Yeah. And then.
It's always like cycling in and out.
Oh, it's always cycling in and out. Yeah, that's another thing. Your body's not static; it's dynamic. So there is some amount of fat going in and out of your fat cells all day long. It's just that some's coming out and some's going right back in. So there is cycling going on all the time. What you want is a net deficit. So if you're in a net energy deficit, your body's going to burn the energy no matter what. So it doesn't care if you've eaten or not. It's still going to find energy, and it'll just find it in your fat stores. That's why they're there in the first place. Yeah, this whole concept that your body's going to – this whole starvation thing that your body would actually choose to burn tissue, lean tissue, instead of its fat stores makes no sense at all. The reason you even have fat stores is so you have energy when you can't eat. So it's just – it's got to be the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard that people think that's not what fat's there for. And right. That your body would waste away and leave just a lump of fat behind. It just – I mean, and empirically, when you look at the evidence, that doesn't happen. So I'm just sort of too far down the road to even see how people can think that, because it's just the most absurd idea that people would believe that your body would burn fat first – or burn lean mass first and leave your fat.
Right.
Like, your entire system's designed to do the reverse of that.
I mean, I could see it. I could see it happening if someone was doing something that was causing your body to adapt differently, like becoming a marathon runner.
No. I mean,
you don't think?
Well, I mean, lean mass. Okay, so when you're doing like long duration stuff like that, that type of training, and you're doing it often, your body brings the size of your muscle down on an efficiency basis, because it's easier to get oxygen to a smaller muscle than a bigger muscle. And since the smaller muscles can still get the task, the demand done, so running's not like highly intense, so it doesn't need to be big, kind of like weight training makes the muscles need to be bigger. Since running's a smaller muscle can still get the job done and deliver oxygen more efficiently, then it will remodel to a smaller muscle.
Right.
But that's not like – the people got to stop thinking lean mass gets burnt, so to speak. It kind of gets remodeled, I guess you could say. Like right. Fat gets burnt. Lean mass gets remodeled. Yeah. Again, lean mass is everything, right? It's not just muscles. It's all the organs. It's everything. Everything that's not fat.
Yeah, because that would kind of suck ass if all of a sudden, like, you know, you were going in a deficit and like it started pulling away from your heart muscle.
Well, no amount of activity is, I think, going to do that. I mean, even aerobic activity stimulates the heart muscle. Literally, it grows.
Sure, but do you see where I'm going?
It grows
with that
stronger. Oh yeah, but again, the activity dictates where it gets pulled from. Bed rest does. Bed rest, everything atrophies. Like sure. If you're just lying in bed wasting away, some people who like really old people who like break a hip. And they're like lying in bed. One of the huge comorbidities is the fact they just can't get out of bed. So like they just start wasting away, and literally their cardiovascular system, meaning their heart, their vessels, and their lungs, become so weak that they actually can die just from that stuff just being so weak. So it doesn't have anything to do with their actual skeletal muscle, like the muscles that you see in the mirror and move. It's the smooth muscles, which are the cardiovascular system is part of that. Those muscles get super weak. So one of the dangerous things is they got to get up and move around.
Yeah.
But if you break a hip, you can't. So it's like, oh man, like one of the comorbidities of a broken hip is just wasting away.
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's talk about fat release and that type of thing. You know, one of the things that we hear about, especially in supplementation, is, you know, the release, like especially with caffeine and things like green tea, that it allows you to release more body fat stores.
So various items, stimulants, like things that's like ephedrine, things that stimulate epinephrine, ephedrine, caffeine, Yohimbe, and other more powerful drugs. What they do is they help stimulate the release of fat, so your body would dip into the fat stores maybe a bit quicker or a bit easier than without some of those type of drugs, and it's because of the specific cells receptors they target, like beta receptors. So, and that's measurable, and you can show that. The thing is, if you're not in a deficit, that's going to be irrelevant, because if you're in if you're calorically neutral or in an excess, your body's still going to be in a net position of storage, not burn. So you may be able to mobilize a bit more fat, but like we said, it's all dynamic, so that fat that gets mobilized just gets – it's going to be restored regardless. And And then if you're in a deficit and you can maintain the deficit and maybe you take a stimulant to go with it, then you may shift your, like, let's just for arbitrary numbers, let's say over a given duration of exercise, you were going to, you know, let's say for the next hour, 60% of the calories you burn during that hour were going to be from fat naturally. Let's say if you took one of these stimulants, you might be able to mobilize a bit more, and let's say 65% or 64% of the calories you burn during that hour were from fat. So you may shift to the point where you get the body to conserve a bit more carbohydrate and burn a bit more fat. Incidentally, the overall effect of becoming more aerobically conditioned from doing regular exercise can also cause that shift to the point where you tend to save a bit of – your body gets more efficient at dipping into fat a little bit quicker. So that's one of the effects of chronic training is you actually get a little bit better at shifting that balance to a bit more fat a little bit sooner. But again, okay, these are minor differences. Now, all of these things may affect the end of contest prep, or like as you're moving towards the end of a weight loss program, like the guys in our contest or competitors are getting on stage, like at the end where they add in a lot more cardio. But by that time, you're probably already right on the button with your calories. You're in a predictable deficit that you've managed to, like, that you can handle on a daily basis. And then if you add in a bit more cardio, well, that's just an even bigger deficit. And if you know, if you're taking like a caffeine and ephedrine mix or caffeine, something like that, then you might start mobilizing even a bit more fat, you know, coupled with the training effect of being a little bit better at it. So all of those things can add up, you know, maybe an extra couple hundred calories. But once you're rolling along in a deficit at the end, that might start to really show up. But that doesn't mean that you can eat at maintenance or above maintenance, toss in like a stimulant product and just think all of a sudden you're just going to start melting away fat. It's kind of unrealistic.
Right. I'm kind of looking at it like this. Like, let's say you had a squirt bottle. I'm thinking of a squirt bottle, and like you have the little squirter, but the squirter actually aims into a tube. So it's almost like a self-containing tube where it just basically goes back down and loops around, and you know, you can dip back into it again, and you can squirt that thing as much as you want to and mobilize that water, but there's no way for it to get out. It just continually loops back down.
There needs to be a demand. See, the thing is, cells will uptake energy as they need it. So you can mobilize energy out of a fat cell, but if there's no other cell that wants it, it's just going to go right back into a fat cell.
Yeah, it's like...
So mobilization's like one thing, but oxidation's the other thing. So it's like
coming to a party nobody wants you at.
Yeah, I guess.
It's kind of. It's like you walk in and like...
Well, you know what it is? It's getting in a car with nowhere to go, and then you just kind of end up back at home. So you can mobilize, fat can become mobilized, like a certain amount of fatty acid can be mobilized from a fat cell, but it needs to be uptaken by another cell and burnt.
It's like going to the store. Yeah, you're right. It's like going to the store, but the store is closed.
Kind of.
So you have to get home. Yeah.
So you can artificially try to increase fat release, but if there's not a demand for that fat to be burnt by another cell, then that an artificial increase gets you kind of nowhere. So that's creating a caloric deficit, the release is demanded by, because the cells that need to burn energy are going to get it from fat stores.
Right. And this is kind of a timely talk right now because, you know, the contest is ending up. A lot of guys are trying to really tweak down and do some stuff. I know I mentioned earlier we were kind of talking about cardio, and, you know, this might be a spot where you would add cardio back in.
The trick here is all of this physiological talk about what it might do with cells and if you can, you know, the chronic training effect, you become a bit better at burning fat and all that stuff. If adding in more exercise stimulates your hunger to the point where now you're all of a sudden created a lot more hunger than you had before, and now you're like, man, I really want to eat more. If that happens more so than your ability to control your calories, then all of this extra fat burning it might produce, all of it's all for naught.
Right.
So the physiological effects might be smaller than the psychological hurdle you've just placed in front of yourself. Like, yeah, I just, you know, I did my weights this morning, and then this evening I went and did an hour of really, you know, relatively intense cardio. But all night long, I was fighting eating. And like, if I keep this up, I'm just going to give in and eat. So if that's all you've done to yourself is just create a new need to eat, you know, you may throw off the balance of what you already had going. So people tend to seem to find like a calorie level they can handle. Like lots of guys are testing it out and they, you know, they try 1200, it's a bit low. Some guys even out at 1600. They're all over the place, but they find a spot that like seems to work for them. And then if you start, if that's rolling along and you're losing weight and looking good and everything feels good, it's touchy to try to tweak that, right? Like you can at the end, if you're really confident that you got a handle on it, you might be able to add in cardio and not have it affect your appetite.
But you'll know.
But you'll know, but why try to fix something that's not broken? So you got to be careful if you want to like step it up. I would like kind of add it in bits. I wouldn't just all of a sudden try to throw in. Now bodybuilders do this, but they know what they're getting themselves into, right? They'll literally towards the end of their contest prep, they'll actually just start adding in more and more cardio. And it works because they just will not eat anymore. No matter how much their hunger goes up, they don't care. They're just not going to eat anymore. And they're probably using all kinds of stimulants to control their appetite and stuff too, but they don't care. All they know is, yeah, another hour and a half in the gym is going to burn this many more calories, and I know I'm not going to cheat on my calories. So, yeah, and that's just that extra hour is just that much more burnt. But for most people, they don't think of it that way, and most people don't have that kind of control on their calories.
Right.
Mostly because they're not going in a competition and going to be standing on a stage in front of a bunch of people live, and like that whole idea of being on stage live, that's like a pretty big. That's a pretty big driver to stick to what your diet is and you, all of that stuff.
Oh, but yeah, you're going to be embarrassed. And you're probably paying for a coach, too.
Oh, yeah, you're paying for a coach. You got to those poor guys have to pay to be in those competitions. It's not like anyone pays them to go in them. Like most – unless you're like a top-level pro, most people who do any of those competitions lose money. They don't make money.
Well, yeah, so, you have to – it's like golf. You have to have somebody pay your entry fee.
All that stuff.
Like usually your sponsors – pay your entry fees and stuff like that.
Yeah, but like your amateur bodybuilders aren't really sponsored. They're just doing it for something to do. So
I was just saying for like golf and
and
tennis and stuff like all these what people don't like a lot of people like Tiger Woods will have a sponsorship exemption a lot of times from qualifying or things like that. But like literally these people what people don't get is these people have to pay to get in.
Pros actually have to pay.
Yeah, I mean it might be 10 grand.
Yeah.
Not for bodybuilding, but for some other stuff. I mean, we're not talking about $100. I mean, we're talking a couple thousand.
Yep.
You know, just to get in. So I mean, yeah, you're talking about putting your ass on the line. You know.
Yeah. So when it comes bringing it back to bodybuilding, those guys have a bunch more things that are helping keeping them like on track. So.
Yeah. And the other thing too is I know you've talked about in the past. You know, one of the guys you knew that was. How he ate and how he was at 1600. The guy I hang out with, I mean, he's at, I think he's like 2022, you know, is his contest diet. But again, he's on more stuff.
Yeah, and don't compare yourself to other people. Just because somebody else can eat a bit more than you, that doesn't mean you should.
It's, yeah, exactly.
You can test, and if it doesn't work, well, it just doesn't work for you. It doesn't mean your metabolism's broken. See, that's the other thing that people aren't. When we hear about like what our basal metabolic rate calculator suggests, that's why I say get a bunch of calculators, get an average, and then start there. That doesn't mean that's actually what your BMR is. That just means what aren't the known data could suggest is a rough guess. And then from there, your BMR will be something likely close to it. But averages for populations never mean they're exactly for any one person. Because all they are is a tool. To estimate what what people in the population roughly at your size might roughly be. But you could be 200-300 calories above or below it. But if you're guessing wrong by 200-300 calories and you're trying to create a 300-400 calorie deficit a day, hoping to lose a pound a week, if your guess is off by 300 calories and then your ability to guess at the calories you're eating isn't dead on, which is impossible to do because we've discussed that, that alone could be the explanation why people think there's something wrong with their metabolism, why they can't lose weight. They're like, no, I've calculated my BMR, it's 1500, and I read my labels, and I eat 1500, and I don't lose weight, so there's something wrong. When they don't realize, well, no, your BMR is not 1500, and you actually aren't eating 1500 calories. And all it is errors. But no one thinks of it that way. But unless you've actually had your metabolic rate tested. And the other thing is when you get your metabolic rate tested, that's only tells you what it is during the moment of being tested in the lab. Like your metabolic rate, that's not representative of you just moving around during the day.
Yeah, it's not static or thinking.
You know what I mean? It's just different. So the point is these are all – the point is just because a calculator or a textbook says something, that doesn't mean it's actually what happens with you. It just it probably provides – the best it does is provides you with a good starting point. And then from there, you have to do an experiment to see what your actual caloric need is. And since you can't exactly calculate calories eaten, you have to also include an error factor, assuming everything you eat's probably got a bit more calories than the packages say. And then you're going to end up with this sort of running average of calories. And then that's mostly all that matters. Getting into all of these specifics of heart rate zones and this and that and the other. Because, again, then there's errors in the calculations on how many calories any exercise burns anyways. So, I mean, that's all just a guess. That's all just estimates, too. Those aren't 100%. Like, you and I could do the exact same workout, but at the exact same intensity, step for step. But burn two different levels of calories out of that workout, even if we weigh more or less the same amount too. So it's just, you know, just because some machine said, "Hey, I burned 400 calories," you're like, "Yeah, me too." No, you didn't. Like, we both burned a specific amount to our body. Now the machine probably estimates somewhere close, but even if the estimate's off by 50 to 70 calories, you know, after 10 days of a 50 or 70 calorie estimate error, that's a 500 or 700 calorie difference. That's a third of a pound. Like, you see how that adds up fast? Like, for,
oh yeah,
you know, like, I mean, that's the difference between one guy losing 5 pounds over the next 5 months and the other guy's like, man, I'm just not getting anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you could assume probably at the beginning, I'd assume a 500 calorie error across the board at the beginning.
Yeah, and then as you get better at it, you'd be like, yeah, you know, maybe that's not as big. I'm not making. And most of our guys are starting to understand that, and they start off not understanding there's that much of a calorie error. And then when you really start to look at stuff, like take some of the foods that you buy and weigh them and compare them to what they say they are. And you'll start finding out that there's more error than you think.
Oh yeah. I mean, one of the things that, like, bodybuilders do is they literally weigh food.
Mm.
Nobody ever talks about this part when it comes to their diet and how they know what they're eating, but, like, literally they have scales.
And we're not, like, saying to become obsessive compulsive like a bodybuilder, but they
absolutely
do,
not. But
they
getting,
do it, at least show you what it takes to be that spot on. And if you at least go through the exercise just once, or maybe just for a week, try it. Or, I don't know, a couple of days, try it. And then you'll just have a rough idea. And then from there, you'll just have kind of a running average in your head. Like, most people do that. They do it for a week. They get used to it. And then, you know, on their travels, as they buy things, they're like, yeah, the thing I just ate was about 500. Or that, you know, that coffee I just had with the cocoa on it, that is about 150. And as long as you have that, like, kind of really rough average in your head, you kind of can know where you're at. But if you're just blindly guessing, again, this is all assuming you're trying to change the look of your body. If you just don't care, then who cares? But if you're actually trying to get somewhere, you gotta have at least some idea of what you're doing.
Well, what we're ultimately talking about overall is, you know, especially with AI, and then we talked about with VIs, you know, we're trying to get you to there's a convergence point. Obviously, the optimum AI is a convergence point, and you're somewhere along that continuum, and you're trying to move towards that. And really what we're doing is we're trying to point out and give you a base level of understanding for yourself on how you understand you so that you can make the correct decisions on a day-by-day basis to converge. So if all of a sudden there's a party going on tonight and you want to go, well, you know, you understand what you have to do. If you're busy that day and the only thing around you is fast food, you know, yeah, I mean, fast food probably isn't the greatest thing in the world to eat, but at least you know what you can do with it. You know what I'm saying?
If there's going to be food at the party, you're like, is there a way for me to just hold off eating today so I can eat big at the party? Or, you know, but yeah, it's all working within the constraints of what your kind of daily routine's presenting you.
Yeah, or if, like I say, I mean, because that's why it's tough to demonize food, because, like, literally, like, nobody, well, I'm not going to say nobody, but hardly anybody is gonna pound fast food for three meals a day. I mean, some people might, but I mean, if you're,
every
if you're,
day.
Yeah,
most people can't even do two fast food sittings in one day, you know, regardless of what they've done the days around it.
Right. So I know we get some comments about people saying, well, man, you guys, it sounds like you guys are saying fast food is great. No. No, what we're saying is that, yeah, yes, is it, should you probably eat more fruits and vegetables? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. Makes sense for a bunch of reasons, mainly just because the caloric density is lower, and it just helps, and you get to eat more. And for me, but you know, on the other side of that, I mean, can you squeeze fast food in and be okay? Yeah, as long as you don't overdo it. You know, you just have to know what you're working with. You can't be afraid of it. You just have to be able to kind of move through life and understand what you're getting into and what you're not getting into. And that's the freeing part of it. As soon as you walk at McDonald's and you say, because that's the only restaurant around, you're in, you know, BFE, and it's 5 o'clock, you haven't eaten all day, you need to get something to eat, and you walk at McDonald's and you know what the deal is. You've got choices. Mm-hmm. So it's about making better choices for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, based on what your goal is. That's all it is.
Yeah, and then the goal is not focused on the food. The goal is some kind of body weight goal or body shape goal. For us, it's a body shape goal, so body shape and size. So, I mean, whatever food works to fit in that goal, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's likely less fast food than maybe you were eating before. It may not be. It may be the same.
Yeah,
the food specifically is kind of irrelevant. I mean, I don't know. The whole argument about food just gets ridiculous. It goes back to last week's thing, like breaking it down to its component parts. Like, it's an impossible argument to try to pick why one food's better than another. You can never do it. It's impossible.
Right. I mean, it would be like this. This is what goes through people's heads. I know it does because it went through mine. If fast food is the only thing around, you go, you know what? Screw it. I'm eating fast food. It's already bad for me anyway. I might as well just go for the gusto. And you order every damn thing. You're like, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, it's the all or nothing mentality. It's like, well, I missed my workout. I'm just going to eat an entire pizza.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, not one slice. I'm going to eat it all. And it's going to be a Meat Lover's.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw ice cream on top of it.
Why not?
Yeah, I mean, screw it. We're just going to really self-indulge. Because that's the thing. When you start getting in healthy versus unhealthy and that type of thing, especially when it comes to this. I mean, perfect example. I remember being back in school where, like, let's say you had seven classes, like we're talking high school, right? And let's say you had your first five classes, your teacher gave you homework that night. And so, like, for the sixth and seventh class, you were just rooting for homework to be done. Just to make it worse.
Just to make it worse. Yeah, I don't know. People have an all or nothing sort of thought when it comes to food. And especially with the way the workout affects the way they eat. If you miss your work, it's the difference between like logic and desire, or at least allowing your rational side of your head to at least direct and control your desire to eat. So if you get to the gym, you're like, okay, so it's been a good day. I've already been to the gym. I don't want to spoil the workout by ruining it with a crushing a bunch of fast food today. So that alone helps people stay strict on their diet to some degree. Whereas if you somehow miss the workout or give up on it or something just doesn't work at the workout, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, that sucked. I might as well just go get a burger. But that doesn't have to be that way. But just some, like Diedrich said that in his, when we interviewed him, it was like one of them, you don't have to be perfect on both sides to, you can be good on one side without being great on the other. So if you miss a workout, that doesn't mean all is lost on the diet side for the same day.
Yeah, you don't throw in the towel for the entire day on everything.
Yeah. No, but we've strayed here, so I guess we should probably wrap it up. So it's pretty normal for us. But anyways, so the general point was don't get too caught up with target energy burning zones, heart rate zones, any of that stuff. A deficit's just a deficit. It's not going to help you at all to have any more intimate understanding of exactly how fat is liberated from fat cells. Like, it's not going to get you anywhere. Just all you need to know is the more exercise you do, the more of a deficit you could potentially build as long as you don't compensate by eating more food. And your body's, if you're in any kind of deficit, no matter how you created the deficit, your body will find the calories in your fat cells, and that's where it'll burn them from. So you don't need to be burning, quote, burning fat during the exercise itself.
Yeah, I guess the overall theme of this whole thing is that you don't necessarily need to know all of the science of all of the other stuff. You just need to know the science of you and how you work and what your triggers are.
Right, and it's all about what works for you on a daily basis. Like, if you really want to know how this works, you got to go take a freaking physiology degree, like exercise phys degree. That's the only reason I know. It takes years to know this stuff. I can't tell it to you in a podcast.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm here drilling you with stuff.
Basically.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, well, you got anything else? I think that's about it.
No, that's good.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, for John Barber, I'm Brett Howard, and that's your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast.